25 minutes after the hour, we welcome to the studio. Actually, he's not in the studio. Don's in Garden Valley in his wine headquarters. Is that what I should call it? Wine headquarters?
My wine.
Well, Valle della Pace.
I'm actually not at my winery at the moment.
No, that's true.
I'm at my house, in my studio, if you will, or my office. But, you know, I'm here, I'm present, and away we go.
And David's up there in East Dakota, so we're all present and accounted for. Dr. Don is a member of the Board of Creation Moments. He's a biochemist, he's a vintner, and he's a well-traveled guy. I mean, you've been to Russia and to Cuba and to Seattle. I mean, I'm impressed.
Oh, yeah, I have been to Seattle. Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. I used to live in that area, and I'm glad I don't anymore.
Really?
That's a different Seattle these days, isn't it?
I don't remember. I don't have good thoughts about Seattle either. I mean, I was there once and took a trip on a boat, you know, and out in the harbor. And I guess that was kind of pleasant, but, you know, I don't have all that many memories of it, except for the fish market.
Yeah, the fish market. But, that's the...
Is that the one where they throw fish at each other? Is that where they catch fish there? Is that the thing?
Yeah.
They throw fish at each other.
Okay.
I mean, basically, they'll throw fish at
sounds,
you.
Sounds
want,
wonderful. But, yeah.
Well, what fun those people have.
We bring Don in because of his scientific background, though, not his life in Seattle or his winery, which is very good, by the way. You can link to it from our site at brokenroadradio.com, just so as you know. Instead, today, we're going to talk about... Scaling laws in enzyme function reveal a new kind of biochemical universality. Now, does that grab you? Well, once we learn what we're talking about, we lost our audience on that one. Yeah, well, it's downright scientific. It sounds like something that should only make sense to a scientist, and it is it's out of molecular biology. So it's. But explain to us why this is significant and why evolution is embarrassed to hear this.
Okay. Well, it actually goes back a ways. And so if you had evolution, for example, and you would have evolutionists have this last universal common ancestor, that is that everybody can go back to a common ancestor. And so since we have a common ancestor, but we should then have similar components. That's what they originally said, and it was because of all the thunderbolts and everything on the rocks and all of the situation that created the first amino acids and created the first DNA and all this other stuff. So one can have a wonderful story, but does it hold true to life? And as we learn more and more about the cell and more about how the cells function, we find the opposite is true. So, example, if evolution was true, then, you know, of course, all life, we see that all life has RNA and DNA and 20 amino acids, which make up the proteins in living things. And so therefore, because of that commonality, and of course, there's ADP, adenosine triphosphate, which is the energy molecule of every cell, and you wouldn't have chemical reactions taking place in the cell without certain types of without ATP, and biotin and riboflavin and the vitamins and, you know, the heme molecules that make up, for example, hemoglobin, and those type of things. Life wouldn't exist. I mean, if, you know, for the most part. So, because of the similar chemical makeup of life, the evolutionist would say, for example, the Theodosius Dobzhinsky. Expressed a point that, hey, What do these biochemical and biologic universalities mean? That is, the makeup of biology and living things are all universal. What does all that mean? Well, they suggest that life arose from an inanimate matter only once, and that all organisms, no matter how diverse, in other respects, conserve the basic features of the primordial life or the primordial soup. So whatever was happening back then in the primordial soup, then that dictated all of life. And so therefore, voila, we've got universal biochemistry, if
should,
you will.
Should be common to all of us then, common to all of us. They could look inside of us and say, aha, there it is. There's the remnant. Yep.
Exactly. Now, it's unfortunate that these folks did this study because what they looked at was, okay, if all of life is similar, came from a common source, then we should see similarity in the biochemistry. And what did we find? The more detail you look, the more diversity you have. So, for example, let me give you kind of a computer example, which would probably be a little bit easier for folks to understand than talking about enzymes, which is what they looked at, different classes of enzymes, for example. So, in a computer, you've got different functional groups. For example, you've got the CPU, or the processing unit, the central processing unit. You've got memory. You got to have some memory to store, instructions and to store intermediate, data functions and things like that. And, you've got to have some type of input and output. So you got keyboards, and you got to have, computer screen or a printer or a teletype they used to have in the olden days. And all computers today, if one looked at all the different laptops, for example, if this universality, held, then you would see, for example, that all laptops, all computers had the same central processing unit, and they had the same manufacturer for their memory, and they had the same graphics processor unit and the various parts made by the same company. But we have a problem with that, because we know that there's competition, and we've got different manufacturers of semiconductor chips now. When the first computer came about, it was it was gears and stuff, and then that went to tubes, electronic tubes, and now we have transistors and more appropriately the microchips that we have today, where you've got millions of functional electronic units packed into a little wafer, a little silicone disc. And so the computer has evolved quite a bit, if you will, if you want to use that language, from its origins. And while we retain the same functionality as maybe the older computers, we have great diversity in the individual components.
I want to sneak in a question here, because I'm for a long time now, I've been in my own mind, in my idle moments, and I have a lot of those, I'm thinking of how computers mimic life in terms of electrons, little tiny things making sense, pixels coming together and making bigger pictures. That is, the smaller and the more complicated you get, the clearer the overall umbrella plan for things becomes. What you've just described to me is like, okay, we all have the same input devices because we have hands, we have mice, and we have keyboards, we have screens to look at. But the software is different, and it's almost like there are a bazillion different operating systems in real nature That is, for each species, they have their own operating system. So it's not every half on Windows and half on Apple or Linux or Haiku or the other operating systems that exist. There's actually an unlimited number of operating systems, but with the same, I mean, creatures still have eyes, they still need energy, they need food, they have central nervous systems, but each one has its own operating system. Is that a fair comparison?
Well, it's similar similar to that. Because we're talking about the physical form of life, and not in quote the spiritual form of life or the soul or the spirit that's in life. I would we're talking about the physical form.
Well, the basic elements though are the same from computer to computer. It's silicon. And it's various rare earth metals and things that make batteries. So it's like the materials are there. We're all carbon-based creatures, right? That have what we call life. But
yeah, we're all organic, which mm-hmm. is carbon, oxygen, and nitrogen, and hydrogen, of course. I want to go back because it's a little bit like the central processing unit. You know, each manufacturer of central processing units, claim that they have the biggest, the greatest, or maybe the smallest and the fastest with now, instead of having one processing unit, these things have multiple processing units. So you can get 16 or 32 processing units in your, well, not in your laptop so much yet, but it's coming. Apple's new, hardware has 8 to 16 processing units. And so things are changing from that point of view. So the functional unit is different in the various computers, but they serve the same type of purpose. That is, reading, for example, the code that the computer program is doing, just like we're using Skype for this program. We're both using Skype, but I'm using it over a Mac computer and you're using it over a PC computer, but so the outcome is similar in the same, but the functionality, the individual components are functioning in a similar manner, but my Mac computer, for example, has totally different components than your PC, even though it's functioning the same.
So evolution might look at what we're doing and say, "Ah, we're all in the same system because we can see each other." I mean, the computer screen is pretty much the same, yours, mine, David's, anybody else who's tuned in on computer today. And that would be a fallacious assumption. It doesn't recognize the degree of difference in the operating systems.
Yes, it doesn't in the operating systems or the components. Mm-hmm. The differences in the actual components themselves. And therein lies the similarity with the biological systems. Because as you go along, for example, let me take DNA and RNA. So we know DNA is in the nucleus of the cell, or at least those of you who have taken biology any degree of biochemistry.
Some of us are still waiting, yeah.
Yes, well, the science does move on, and so we have DNA. DNA is in the nucleus, and the DNA needs to be, translated, transcribed, if you will, into RNA. Then the messenger RNA comes out of the nucleus, and then that is read by some enzymes. But then you have, for example, these RNA little pieces called transfer RNA or tRNA, and it's the transfer RNA that kind of translates the three nucleotide code into which amino acid is going to get stuck in which particular place in a protein. And so since that's a very important aspect of all cells, that is, creating more enzymes and creating more machines and nuts and bolts, if you will, that to make the cell work and then the organism work, then you would expect that all transfer RNA enzymes or ligases is what they're called would be the same. And when you actually look at the various organisms from all across biology, what you find is, yes, they serve the same function, but they're different. They're not the same. They're different. And even, you know, so you've got to have at least 20 different transfer RNA molecules for the 20 different amino acids, even within a cell, but even all of those are different across different species and across different organisms. So we've got a problem with evolution, because evolution would say, wait a minute, you know, all those should be the same since they have a common ancestor. They all should be the same, and they're not the same. They serve the same function. And it was because the early evolutionists, for example, and Darwin included, had a macro view of life and not the micro view. So, if you will, I'm going to change the phrase instead of, the devil is in the details. God is in the details. If you will. And so the more we look, the more details we look, the more differences that we find. And it's just like with the computer example, the different computers, require, okay, they're similar in function, in the various components are similar in function, but they're built differently because we have, maybe different needs, or there's, one wants a certain speed in the graphics area, for example, so it's going to have a heavier graphics graphics processor unit. And in other areas, they say, no, we want to have more memory. And so you've got all of these different things that point to intelligent design, by the way. I mean, you can't have this diversity without having a lot of people building these different things and designing these different things. And so you have more of intelligent design aspects, as opposed to, this one computer just evolved from this other computer, and so this one form of life just evolved from another form of life. So because of the differences then in all of these enzymes, this is what that study actually looked at. It looked at the enzymes and said, okay, for a given function, that is, these tRNAs, just as one example, for a given function, are these enzymes the same? They should be. If evolution, if we evolved from certain ancestries, and they're saying there was one ancestor, the evolutionists are saying there was one amoeba or one blob in the primordial soup, so they all should be, the same, because, my goodness, it took a long time to figure out how to have life in the first place, so they say. And so all of those enzymes then should be the same, but they're not. They're different. And so there's no way of explaining that on an evolutionary universal biochemistry, for example, point of view, because they're not universal. The functions are universal. And so they have to back up and say, okay, we've got universal functions, so therefore evolution took place. But no, that is more. You've got similar functions, but different, different enzymes, for example, and more complex we go into from bacteria, let's say, to the eukaryotic cells that we have in our bodies, you know, animals and things have eukaryotic cells, whereas bacteria is prokaryotic. But that, you know, the more complexity you have in the organism, the more variability, the more difference these basic functional enzymes are. And so, you know, we wind up with, okay, what do we do with this from a evolutionary point of view? And it's, you know, it's kind of like the English language, where you can have similar words, for example, to describe the same thing, like, gee, the sky is dark today, or it's kind of murky, or it's shaded, or it's dimmed, or it's obscured, for whatever, you know, whatever reason. Those are all similar words that kind of mean the same thing, but they give different nuances to, you know, to the sentence that the sky is dark. And so that's what we're finding in the biological realm, is that we've got a multitude of variation within the very basic functioning of the cell that all life has in order for it to be, in quote, alive. But yet the molecules themselves, the enzymes that perform these similar functions or these identical functions, are different. And so it's morphologically you can see that. That is, you know, we are all different, if you will, from one another. While we are all human, you know, we have different characteristics, you know, different lengths of our bones, for example, different hair colors, different eye colors, different features, facial features. It's like God, you know, when he created all of this, said, okay, I know this is coming, so I'm going to confound the wise. And so... it gives them, you know, pause to say, well, maybe our thinking is wrong, if they were open-minded.
Well, many of them seem to be, and from what we've read and talked about recently, evolutionists are deserting a sinking ship, and basically admitting we don't have scientific evidence for this thing at all. So it seems to me that this whole explosion of DNA research and findings and studies has put the lie very effectively to evolution. It's odd that for something that pretended to rely on science is now being dispelled, revealed, unearthed by real science.
I had the same thought, Don, that it seems like, and I've granted this is like we're in tunnel vision here. We're only seeing evolution and its opposite of non-evolution or creation in a very narrow way. Now, it seems like there have been a number of defeats. Evolution is taking it in the shorts. I mean, it's every time you turn around, you know, at least from our viewpoint, evolution is losing. And, you know, how much longer? I guess I have two questions. Are there examples of evolution winning? That there's somehow somebody is accepting the notion that evolution is acceptable and okay, or they're just not looking into it?
Well, they just keep redefining. You know, they keep redefining their parameters. For example, this whole concept of biochemical universality, for example, is we've got to shift from the individual molecules now or enzymes to functioning units, and so now our emphasis is going to be on, okay, we can describe life more from the functioning units, just like we can describe different computers from its functional units, and we can say, oh yes, okay, that is not an automobile, for example, that's a computer. And so we can, you know, they just back up and say they're using, even though the evidence is disproving, you know, their initial thinking, because we've gained more knowledge, we're just going to use that knowledge to continue to say that evolution holds when indeed, you know, it's kind of falling apart as we've
Have you heard an evolutionist say that DNA research is false, that it's turning out lies? Have they refuted DNA research in any way?
Oh no, not at all. Not at all. I mean, you know, you can. It's like with anything. I mean, it's the interpretation. It's the you can get the two people can look at the same results, and because of their you know, their assumptions and their background, they'll probably come up with two different explanations for the results. But when you take all of the results, all of the data, you know, together, you have to honestly ask the question, what model actually fits the data, the cumulative data better? Is it the evolutionary model, or is it a creation model where, okay, you know, it looks like everything has design, and you know, it looks like things are not random. The more we look, the more non-randomness we find. And, you know, things have functionality to them as if they were designed. So, but we're afraid to say that they actually were designed. Now, we don't have that problem with a computer. You can look at a computer and say, okay, that was designed. But somehow, when it comes to the complexities of life, we say, oh, no, that wasn't designed. We just came here by chance. And it's all because we do not want to acknowledge a supernatural being who is over everything that we might be accountable to.
Seems to me that evolution is intuitively false. When nature speaks to us the way it does, when the Bible speaks to us the way it does, where there's an awareness of a spiritual realm that most of us can't understand or quite grasp, but we're convinced deep inside that it's there, evolution seems to be bogus from the get-go. And here's just another point, another chink in the armor of evolution that's been removed here. So interesting stuff. Even if it is a little heavy on science, I think we learned something today. And if they're going to find a missing link, they need to find something in between physical and spiritual.
You know, every Tuesday, I want to go back and take high school classes again. you know that?
You mean high school science classes?
Yeah.
Particularly science classes, yeah. I mean, yeah, I wouldn't. History and social studies, no big deal.
But no.
Every you know, I get the feeling that I dozed off during some of the biology classes.
One place you can go to refresh your memory, David, and everybody out there, is creationmoments.com, because there is a wealth of scientific information there that makes sense in terms of the biblical story of creation, and powerfully refutes all the nonsense that comes from the other side. Some of us are just too gullible, I think. Look around you. The proof is there. Dr. Don, thanks so much. Appreciate your time with us. And again, the information you brought, you taught us something, and we'll look forward to next week. Okay?
All right. Sounds good. You folks have a great week.
You too.
Yep. Bye-bye. Thanks, Doc. Can hardly wait until next week.